Hello and welcome to the Democracy In podcast with me, Mary Layton. It feels like democracy is absolutely imploding in the US. One of our major parties seems to have given itself over entirely to religious fundamentalism and perhaps even outright fascist thinking. The result is that we have all these profoundly dangerous but also deeply unpopular laws being enacted, like the ban on abortion or the ability to own and carry assault weapons in public. This is a really frightening time. But I've noticed that many of the solutions that seem to be proposed are about going back to what our democratic system used to be pre-Trump, because that's the only system that we know, and that's what democracy is in the US. But the problem is, even before the January 6th coup and the so-called big lie, the US was a country where 1 in 44 adults are legally disenfranchised, and where presidents are still chosen by the Electoral College. A system, remember, that was specifically designed to prop up the power of slave-owning states in the South. Now, as a former anthropologist, I draw hope and inspiration from historical and cultural comparisons. I know that other countries have gone through civil wars, dictators, racist authoritarians, economic meltdown, and they have come out the other end with stronger and fairer democracies. I think the US could do that too. But we could do it a lot faster if we didn't feel the need to reinvent the wheel. So in this podcast, I look at alternative ways of doing democracy. We explore the good, the bad, and the nonsensical side of different democratic systems around the world. This week, we're going to be talking about Mexico with my guests David and Brenda. Now, one small fact that might be helpful as you go through this conversation is that the Mexican Revolution happened from 1910 to 1920, and it is important because the result of the revolution was that the dictatorship came to an end and a constitutional democracy was founded. When you have finished this episode, go check out the website www.democracyinpodcast.com, and there you'll be able to find, under the episodes page, more information about the topics and themes discussed in this episode. Okay, welcome to the second in our series about democracy in, and this week we are talking about democracy in Mexico, and I have two wonderful guests here who are going to introduce themselves, Brenda Lopez and David Palmer. So Brenda, would you like to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. I am Brenda Lopez, and I am a long-term educator and also a technologist. I was born and raised in Mexico City, in the north part of the city, which is a working class neighborhood. And I came to the US, specifically Chicago, like about 20 years ago.
And Brenda, you're like a dual citizen now, right? You have US citizenship.
Yes, I am. And I also now live in California.
Ah, right. You now live in California. So sad. You don't live in Chicago anymore. No longer near us. Thank you. And David, tell us about yourself.
Hi. Thanks for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here with you sharing this space. I'm from Mexico City. I'm a sociologist currently working for INSP, which in Spanish is something like the National Health Institute, in a collaboration project with the University of Michigan, where I met you, Mary.
Yes.
And it's a project about water in Mexico City. So it's really interesting, really political as well sometimes. And I was born in the southeast part of the city, in Iztapalapa. So a lot of political and water problems and really interesting alcaldía. So yeah, that's my story.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, both of you. I think this is going to be interesting because, David, you've worked a lot with people from the US. And I know... David, have you ever lived abroad? I know you came to visit Michigan at one point a couple of years ago.
No. I've always lived here in Mexico City. All my life, I've went to other countries just to as a tourist.
Right, yeah.
And I know a little bit about other countries and political systems. I was, I don't know if I told you this sometime, but I was studying a PhD in sociology. My research was about democracy and social movements. So I was reading a lot about other political systems and democracies in other parts of the world.
Fascinating. Okay, so you're going to be a bit more of an expert than our average guest on here, but that is totally fine. I'm really happy to have your point of view. So tell me a little bit about, at this particular moment in time, what is the big issue in national politics in Mexico that we should keep in mind while we're talking? Like, is there an election coming up soon? Is there something on the horizon that's about to happen or just happened?
Well, Off the top of my head, for example, we just passed a, it was like
Refer
a
referendum.
referendum.
Oh, okay.
It was a weird tool inside Mexico's democracy because it has never been used before. And it was a question about if you agree that the president continues with his position. So it was
Okay.
really contested, and it was a tough issue because there has been this fight between the president and the Electoral Institute in Mexico about the money that the institute get and about the procedures that the institute has. Like, you don't need that much money to make an election, and the institute is, of course I do, because it's a federal election. But in this case, it was about, is this referendum legal? For example, is this a binding referendum? So there wasn't a lot of participation, so that was an issue.
Interesting.
And all the people were saying that it was just a way for the president to legitimize himself for the next 3 years. We have 6 years period with
Okay,
the
yeah.
presidents, so it was about it.
Huh,
So,
interesting.
but and the different thing I just was reading about it was in April, I think. But it's the first time that the referendum is initiated by the person who is being reviewed. So
I
the
see.
president started the referendum
About himself.
about himself.
Okay.
So
And would you otherwise have referendums like this about other people?
it's the first time this happens.
Okay, first time you've had a referendum
In
like this at all.
historically.
Oh wow, okay.
Historically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have there ever been any other referendums, or is it like this is to right, so this is totally a new thing?
It's a complicated issue because he started applying them even in Mexico City when he was the mayor in Mexico City. But it's a somewhat new tool for democracy in Mexico. We started using it in Mexico City in the 90s, but in a federal level, it has never been done before. So, I mean, a lot of people says that this president that we have is a really vertical man, so he makes these really one man center decisions.
Oh, I
There are
see.
people that even call him an authoritarian president. I don't think he is authoritarian, but he makes these really vertical decisions, like the an airport, the Mayan train, and this last consultation, this last referendum.
Interesting. Okay. I'm kind of fascinated by the idea that how you just introduce a new element into a system that hasn't had it before, and how that's then like doing it first at the state level and then trying to introduce it at the federal level, and that's not necessarily going to be legitimate if it doesn't exist before.
The interesting part is like what David said, like not a lot of people really participated, and he got all his supporters to participate on it, of
Right, of
course.
course.
And his supporters were the ones like trying to attract people at the election areas to
Right.
get them to vote and
Right.
participate.
Yeah.
So it's a very smart way of doing it, right? Because it's like usually the opposite. Like this just happened here in California also, where we had
Oh.
a referendum for
Okay.
the state, for the governor,
Right, yes, yeah.
but it's totally opposite, right? Like people wanting to take him out of power,
I
not because he
see.
wanted to stay in power.
Okay.
So it's like a like totally different interest in the way that it's executed.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm hoping we're going to come back to this, and by the end of this episode, when we've gone through all the other stuff, we all have a really good understanding of why this is so weird. So let's start with some absolute basics. Like, so I was looking on Wikipedia this morning, and I hadn't realized that the official name of Mexico is Estados Unidos Mexicanos, and it's not just Mexico, it's the United States of Mexico. So that kind of made me think about like what is the relationship between the states and the federal government? Like, what is the basic organization of the country? And maybe
Well,
Brenda, yeah, Brenda, you could tell us this because like I'm interested in comparison to the US, obviously, right?
I think it's kind of the same idea that it's a decentralized government, and it's mostly like that why it was called Mexico City. No, sorry, it wasn't called Mexico City before. It was Federal District,
Oh, right.
which
Okay.
is DC equivalent, right? Like where you had all the governments, the three main powers, execution, legislation, and judiciary
Okay,
power.
yeah. The idea is that everything is kind of like governed in each one of the states, and then when something happens at the federal level, it's all decided in the federal district for the entire country. But I think that also changed within the last, I don't know the exact amount of years, but it has been within the last 10 years, I would say. And then with this new president, I think with Obrador, one of the things that he tried to do is decentralize the government.
Decentralize it. Okay.
So it's not like now all the things that were all concentrated in Mexico City, he spread them across the country. But some of the things is like, okay, now you have the Secretary of Education in Coahuila, the Secretary of State in Durango, the Secretary of X in different parts of the country. So it's not so centralized.
So I'm wondering, is this, because we talk about this kind of relationship in the UK, where everybody complains that everything is centered in London and the people who live in London don't care about or don't understand the rest of the country. So then every now and again, the Prime Minister will be like, we're going to move the BBC to Manchester or whatever, right? And it never really works because London stays the center. But then in the US, for instance, Washington, D.C. might be the center, but the states themselves have a lot of power. Is the Mexico one a bit more like the UK or the US in that? Like, do the states actually have a lot of power separately from the federal government?
No. I don't see it as much, so much as power. Like, they are very independent.
Oh,
but
okay.
When it comes to, like, in terms of what their own governments in within the state, but when it comes to, like, general decision and federal level, I find that, well, they are a big part of those decisions, but their structure within the state itself, and I don't know, like, I think there are several laws, right? Like, for example, that are still not passed at different states. And some of them, like, let's say, gay marriage, for example, it's allowed in different states, mostly Mexico City because it's super liberal.
Yeah.
But in the rest of the country, it's a basically no-no.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one level. But I would like to hear David too.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, it's a really interesting subject because as a little bit of historical context, when after the independence, the guys who made the constitution, our heroes, national heroes, made or wrote the constitution thinking about other constitutions in the world. It was thought to be as a federal republic.
Right.
But a lot of analysts have said that it's tricky because since it was a really centralized country with all the power centered in Mexico City, all the political but also the economic power centered in Mexico City, it was tricky because how do you make a federal system if all the powers are in one place?
Right.
So, for example, and also not only location, but only the president had a lot of power in the past.
Right.
So, for example, they tried to make a federal congress, but also local congresses. So, for example, with the division of powers, like the executive branch, which is the president, the a legislative branch, which is the Congress, and the judicial branch, which is the Supreme Court and the judicial powers in general, the police, etc. So, but at the beginning, as you know, after the revolution, the PRI, which was the PNR in 1939, formed a really vertical state formed by the president. And some groups of workers like the obreros, the teachers, the doctors, organized in syndicates.
Unions,
so that organization allowed the president to keep the control of all the social groups in Mexico. So in reality, I think it's a
still
really centralized country.
A little question, because the way I see it is like a lot of the states are very independent in terms of like their own like small like local rules and laws. But I also think that there's a big weight from the federal level. But where I would say I see that kind of independence is in these situations where people are more conservative and they don't want to pass certain laws or they wouldn't approve for those kind of situations.
Yeah, of course. And as you said, in the marijuana laws, regulation laws, but also the abortion issue, which in the United States is really
disastrous
crazy right now
and
really sad. But in Mexico, it has been moving forward. Like some states are one by one accepting in their local congress regulation for allowing.
Yeah.
So,
no, but I think it's true.
Yeah, you're totally right. Like, I mean, it has been developing. I was talking about the beginning of the Mexican state, but also like the states have and the municipalities have a lot of power in terms of police, of garbage collection, utilities like water, electricity, things like that. But in a way, I think we have to see the Mexican government as, in paper, as a federal government, but in reality, as a really vertical power. I'm just going to make an example. Say an example.
Go for
when
it.
I was working with the Mexico City government, advising like three guys in power in Mexico City, and it was all about making the major policies go through. Like our mandate was to comply with the mayor's point of view and policies. So it wasn't about doing human rights right, about securing housing or water to people, but to keep happy the mayor. So it's like this, for example, Octavio Paz in El Laberinto de la Soledad says that it's like a heritage from the Tlatoani way of thinking. The Tlatoani was the governor in Mesoamerica, in Mesoamerica and Mexico before the conquest. And the Tlatoani was like this almost godly figure. And they say that the presidents have inherited that kind of power.
Well, I want to quickly interrupt because I want to just make a comment about something you said earlier, David, which I think is really interesting, particularly when we're looking at it in comparison to the US, is that, you know, Mexico City is a city that has been in existence an extremely long time, right? And through several different empires. So it's not just that it's been the center of government and the center of power since the revolution, not even since independence, but before. It was the center of power during the Spanish rule of the country, but also back through the Aztec rule of the country and possibly even further than that. So I think when you're talking about, okay, you want to make it a federal system, and it is on paper, but in reality, you've got hundreds of years of tradition of all the power being centered in one location. That's really hard to change. And it's several hundred years later, it still hasn't changed.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's very centralized. And I also wanted to do and add another thing on what you were saying about the way power is performed, right? Like trying to complain, like talking about the city, I have an experience. I know somebody who also worked directly with the mayor. And the idea was that none of the work that is done really matters if the mayor is not happy. It's not really doing work that is filled or supported by data, by reasoning, or by anything that makes sense. But it's just like, how can we keep some individual happy with their... And it's all about a political platform, of course.
Yeah. But, interesting. So one of my questions is, in terms of like the really basic nuts and bolts of the organization, we've talked a little bit about how you have the three branches, the judicial, the legislative...
Executive.
And the Congress people, right? So, so the head of the state is a president, right? And right now the president is...
Andrés Manuel López Obrador.
Okay, great. And... it sounds like the president in Mexico, is that the highest you go? There's nobody above the president, right?
Yes.
In the way that we have like a monarch, for instance, or a president versus a prime minister, right? And so this is the head of a government and they actually have a lot of power by the sounds of things. Is it similar to what you're saying about with the mayors? That like on the federal level, it's also, you see it as, well, you can propose anything you like, but if the president doesn't like it, it's not happening kind of thing.
I would say, and I think that ties up with what David was saying at the beginning. They consider him like a very autocratic, personality.
Yeah.
So it's also like what the president says is mostly like what happens, because the difference also like a lot of, well, like, I don't know. There's also the way the government works is similar to the US structure, right? We have the senators, we have the representatives, we have everyone is elected too.
Okay.
So there is a mix of powers when you have to come up to like a strong, like when you have to decide what to pass a new law or change something that is relevant to the country, you need the support, that kind of support.
Of like both houses.
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah. There's and are they seen as like an upper and a lower house? Like, is it sort of stacked hierarchically, or are they separate?
It's very similar to the US. The
Okay.
senators have very different, more, much more power than the House of Representatives.
Okay, so how are those seats distributed?
Yeah, I think state-based too. But it's very different, and that's a very good question, because in the US it's depending on which it makes things super, super complex, right? Like
Exactly,
you
yes.
don't have you have one I think you have the senators based on the electoral house, which is different based on population, amount, size of the state, so on, so on. And I think the difference is that in Mexico it doesn't have anything like electoral houses.
Okay.
You have one per state, or if the state is based on population, not in.
Oh,
And
okay.
I'm not 100% sure, David. Do you know that? Like,
A little bit. I mean, I was laughing because it's really complicated and
okay. Like, I'm gonna admit that I did try and look it up online ahead of time,
yeah.
and it was lots of sums, it was lots of math, and I did
Yeah,
not understand.
exactly.
But
No, it's really complicated
yeah.
because the congressman or the diputados have like two ways of making the seat. One is like direct voting, like I vote in my district, which correspond to an area, to a location in Mexico. And we have a lot of districts. I'm sorry, I don't remember the numbers because
That's fine,
they
yeah.
are really complicated. But also from that votation, whoever, and this is thought about as a means to allow representations for all parties. So you vote for a certain congressman or woman, and then a portion of that voting goes to to that party. So, for example, that allows some of the seats to the minorities, and that's for the Congress. But then for the Senate, I think, I'm not sure. I'm sorry if
It's
I
fine.
made a mistake on this. We have another area of representation that are called circunscripciones electorales, which are these massive circunscripciones. There are like five, I think, or I'm just making a mess with numbers, but we have circunscripciones, and the senators are elected in that way with these circunscripciones in mind. So it's a really complicated system, which in the past, when do you remember that we had this party, the PRI, was ruling the government for 70 years?
Oh, wow.
And in the 80s, 90s, there were some reforms that allowed some representation to minority through this system that is called a like proportional representation that allows smaller parties to have a seat on the Congress. But now that has been contested because all the parties have been developing like satellite parties. Like we all know that, for example, the Partido Verde is a part of PRI or is in the same vein. For example, now they are with the Morena, which is a party from López Obrador, and they make arrangement and deals to support some of the policies or lawmaking that the president is making. So
That
they are
sounds
like,
super sneaky.
it is really sneaky. Yeah.
So
But
that's, yeah,
that's
that's,
why
yeah.
proportional representation has been contested in the last few years.
That's fascinating. So it sounds like you're voting on one level for a particular individual to represent your district. Because I'm always interested in this question of what are you voting for? Are you voting for a person? Are you voting for a party? Are you voting for somebody to represent to you? Or are you voting for a group to lead the country, if that distinction makes a difference? But it sounds like what you have there is both, right? You're both voting for somebody to represent your district in Congress. But then part of your vote also goes into this proportional representation system to try and ensure, so it's not just a either or binary vote. Is that correct?
Yeah, for example,
Let's see.
if Morena gets the majority of Congress, but I vote for the Convergencia, which I'm not doing, but it's an example. It's another party. If I vote for Convergencia and they are the minority, they will probably get seats.
Brenda, you look like you were going to say something.
I think one of the things that people also tend to vote is mostly a party. And they don't, I don't know, it's like sometimes there's not really an understanding of the need to vote for variety in your vote, right? So I think a lot of people are, oh, I'm going to vote for PRI, I'm going to vote for Morena. And then they just support the entire party rather than individuals or ideas that they. So it's basically like a general idea, I think. So what they tend to do is do this kind of party elections and then just stop bothering about like finding out more about their local representation
So
because it's harder.
I think we should clarify at this point who are the different major political parties, because there's lots of acronyms here. Like how many political parties are there actually? Because I did hear you just say that one of them was in power for 70 years.
Currently, I don't know how many they are, but we know that
Three
there's
big ones or four.
three main ones.
Three main ones,
The
yeah.
PRI, which is the Partido Revolucionario Institucional, and was the party in power for 70 years during the 20th century, and which was the party that created the Mexican state as we know it
Oh, right, okay.
with Lázaro Cárdenas, which is a really famous president in Mexico. The PAN, which is like the conservative party, Partido Acción Nacional, and the PRD, which is the Partido de la Revolución Democrática, and now, last few years, Morena, which is the party of the president. But we also know that a lot of the PRD people that were inside that party went to Morena. So
Is
those
it,
are.
David, is that a coalition or is this like a they just came into this party?
It's a new party, a
Okay.
new. Soul party, let's say.
So it's you have one that's very conservative, the Morena party is more of the left, would you say?
They say,
It's
but these guys' policies are really white, right on.
central. It's central left.
Okay,
Not
yeah.
so.
And the third one, the one that was in power for like 70 years.
Right.
Very far right.
PRI.
Okay. Yeah. So there is actually, it sounds like there is quite a wide set of different views. It's not like they're all clumped in the middle kind of thing.
And
Yeah, I
I
think so.
would say, yeah, I would say, and the other thing that we, it's very kind of, it was important to notice also is PRI at the beginning and up to like recently has been also far like right, but also like directed by people with lots of money, which have the backup of like either status, like social, economical, like kind of like that's the way it was historically speaking. And I think it's still that way. And the difference with Morena is really like people who are in representing these kind of parties are either engineers, more professionals, and they, well, there's Cárdenas, who was also PRD. He's not Morena. He stopped running. He ran for president like five times. I don't remember how many times. And he never made it. He was very strong at so many points. And Cárdenas and the current president were in that same party, PRD, right? PRD. But and that party is also like very labor oriented. It was more gearing towards this like middle class, like but not to total right, I would say. I mean, no total left, not extreme left.
Well, you just said a moment ago you were talking about the difference between one party was of, let's say, aristocracy, like really, really rich people, and in contrast, the other one was like professionals. But that's still not, you still doesn't sound like you're getting politicians coming up from manual workers, from service workers, from working class people.
I think, at least, I don't know. I think in like right now with Manuel López Obrador, Andre, it's a little bit more clear that it is happening. I also think a lot of the local government in Mexico City, like the current mayor, she is like an engineer or she has a PhD in sciences, for example. And she's also not, well, I don't know her financial or, you know, like class status because I think the way they roll in this case, they're getting a different approach to how do they get into that.
So it sounds like there is some change from a prior, older, maybe 20th century system where it's like all the political class are a kind of aristocratic class to things switching. But it sounds like quite a lot of change in the last 10, 15 years, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. And let's remember that at the end of the 80s and 90s, a lot of the political class was forming the United States, like all these guys that were presidents, like from Carlos Salinas de Gortari, Zedillo,
Of course.
Fox, Calderón were educated in Harvard, in
Of course.
Ivy League schools that were like teaching the
Yeah.
neoliberal way of policy. So they
I am
were.
an idiot for forgetting that because I spent a lot of time studying that in Chile, and wrote a whole chapter in my dissertation about that. But of course, the same thing was happening in Mexico. Yeah. Okay, we are going to take a break here, but there is more to come. In fact, two more episodes covering this conversation that you can download from the website www.democracyinpodcast.com or wherever you subscribe to your podcasts.